Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, for so many of us, executives, small business owners, managers, or individual contributors, conflict with others on the job is a way of life. And today we're going to talk about effective leadership and resolving those conflicts. Can you condition yourself to get along better with others? And as a leader, can you inspire others to resolve conflicts and cooperate to accomplish your corporate mission? And here are some shocking facts that our guest today presented on her website. A whopping 93% of workers in a survey reported being negatively impacted by inability to deal with conflict on the job. And senior executives and business owners spend 30 to 50% of their time resolving staff personality conflicts. And an AMA study revealed employees spend 2 hours each day, or about a fourth of their time, engaging in unproductive squabbles with colleagues. And health care expenditures are 50% higher for workers who report high stress levels, and that's obviously an epidemic in conflict-ridden work environments. Do you dread going to work most mornings because you fear conflict with your boss, co-workers, or with or among employees who report to you? Your personal stress and unease is bad enough, but the impact of conflict at work is a deal-breaker for innovation and probably your business bottom line. And here's the kicker. The primary cause of conflict in your workplace may be you and your co-workers behaving like you did as children, behaviors learned in your childhood. And our guest today, Sylvia LaFaire, Ph.D., offers a fascinating diagnosis of workplace conflict. You, your colleagues, and those reporting to you just might be trapped in patterns that cause you to keep repeating the same behavior over and over while somehow expecting different results. And you're pretty unlikely to get different results, aren't you? And equally fascinating, she contends that much of our workplace behavior can be tracked back to behavior you learned as kids in our original organization, the family. And for a lot of us, the workday is filled with emotional tensions, just like those relationships we had growing up. Dr. LaFaire is here to offer suggestions on what we can do about it, how to recognize and alter unattractive behavior patterns in ourselves and others, and she'll also offer specific advice for you women leaders, current or aspiring, who desire to positively change your organizations. And Sylvia LaFaire, Ph.D., is an award-winning author, executive coach, transformational leader, and leadership development advisor. She's an expert on workplace solutions, president of Creative Energy Options, Inc., and I love that CEO, as they call it, a global consulting company. And she's not desk-bound because she's hiked the Inca Trail, eaten indiscernible stew in the Amazon, and bungee-jumped in New Zealand. And she's the author of award-winning books, Don't Bring It to Work, and Gutsy, How Women Leaders Make Change. And hello, Dr. LaFaire, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Oh, I'm just thrilled to be here, and you're right. Middle age can be our best age.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, I'd like to begin talking about behavior patterns and what we can do about them. How do you, the listener, become aware of the dominant behavior patterns within yourself, and what good will it do if you do learn them?
Well, Roy, let me start with how I got to all of this. It's kind of a fun, interesting story,
yeah.
And you'll see the connection in a second. My background is I was a family therapist, so I was working with, you know, families and couples and parents whose kids were driving them bonkers. And one evening we were doing a program for parents whose adolescent children were just out of control, which meant the room was full.
Yeah, my wife and I went through.
Oh, I think we all have. And I think it's getting harder as time goes on. But anyway, at the end of the meeting, a man walked up to me. I thought he had a question about one of his children. Yeah. And he said, "Will you come work with my senior leadership team?" And I said, "Why?" And he said, "They're fighting." And I said, "So what?" And he said, "But Sylvia, you work with people who have to get along, families." And he said, "They're sort of like a family, and they have to get along."
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, that's kind of an interesting thought. And I went in and did what I knew about how families operate, how the family system operates. And, of course, it was successful, or you and I wouldn't be having this conversation,
no.
And I would never have written a book called Don't Bring It to Work.
Yeah. Well, you identify like 13 common behavior patterns. Could you go through just a couple of those? I know we don't have time to discuss all of them in detail, but I love those descriptions. Just give us a couple as an example.
Oh, I'd love to. So here's what happened. So I, you know, from working with families, I would see these kinds of patterns, and then in the workplace, lo and behold, I'd see the same ones. So I want to underline this. Many days we can be mature and appropriate and do good, kind, wonderful things at work. But on the days when stress hits the hot button, we revert back to the patterns we learned in our original organization, the family.
Yeah.
So let me give a few. A perfect one is what we call the persecutor, also known as the bully. And often, you know, in a family, there was one kid more than the others, if there's more than one child, who took on the role of being the big shot and the one who would kind of poke his siblings around, or her siblings. It doesn't have to be a male. And this shows up at work. Mm-hmm. And what I say is, if your boss is behaving like a baby or being like a bully, you know, they are.
Yeah,
and if you are like a thumb-sucking toddler, look in the mirror. You really are. So there is the persecutor who, you know, wants everything their way and will blame people when it's not. And then, of course, we've got the victim who says, "I guess it is my fault. Everything's always my fault." And often in the family, they had that role. They were kind of the one that everybody pointed to and said, "Well, you're the one who picked two Fridays from now for the picnic, and now it's that Friday, and of course it's raining." And they say, "Yeah, I guess I made it rain."
And it's all your fault.
It's all your fault.
No,
so
interesting. You have on your website, you have a pattern awareness quiz, and I took the quiz, and I was real pleased to see that I was a super achiever and a martyr is my dominant behavior until I looked at some of the elements of that.
Ah,
the super achiever can be at work, continue to inflate themselves off of the expense of others, hate criticism, and their antics are disruptive, and breed fear and resentment within a team. And the martyr didn't sound so great either. So.
Well, it's interesting because here's now, there are extremes. So I don't sense in talking with you the extreme, but we have to look at these tendencies we have.
Yeah.
You know, to have to be the top one and, you know, always make everything. I mean, I have people who call me and they have an MD degree and they've just finished law school and now they're going back to get a PhD. And I think, that's what I mean by superachiever. And the other part of superachiever is me. You know, I have to be first, best about everything. Now, here's the good thing about these patterns, and I'm really encouraging everyone who's listening to go to Sylvia LaFaire, and that's Sylvia with a Y, S-Y-L-V-I-A, and LaFaire is L-A, F as in Frank, A-I-R.com, and take the Pattern Aware quiz, because whatever the patterns are, the good news is all you have to do is see it, do a little bit of strength training, and you can transform the pattern into their positive opposite.
Yeah, that's true.
So the super achiever becomes a creative collaborator. You know, they know really know that they can use their energies in the proper way, but have to include others because it takes a team to win in this day and age.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That making sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So once you identify your own dominant behavior patterns at work, how do you relate them back to your childhood, and how does that really help? When you, I guess it helps because you understand yourself better, but...
Well, here's, you know, again, remember my background was as a family therapist.
Yeah.
So, and I've left the field partly because I think more work, more change can happen working with people in the work environment. That's A. And B, while, you know, certainly therapy has its valid points, often I think it takes too long.
Yeah.
So what happens is once you begin to see the patterns, you can really look back and start to track how those patterns developed and how you became, that you took the role on in the family and how you're still doing it. So may I tell a really quick story about about me?
Sure. We love stories.
Okay, full disclosure. So I was at one day, this is years ago, this is when we were starting to put these behavior patterns together. I was at a meeting in the morning. And something happened that was very annoying, and I kind of put my hand down on the desk harder than necessary, and I said, this just has to stop.
Yeah.
And somebody rolled their eyes and said, oh, she's being such a drama queen. Okay, so I left the meeting, and I thought to myself, what do they know?
Yeah.
And I went on about my day. Later in the day, I was at another meeting, different group of people, different circumstance, but something contentious, something annoying happened, and I knew not to pound my hand on the desk, but I put my hands in the air kind of like, oh, for crying out loud. And somebody turned to somebody and said to them, but loud enough for me to hear, she just gets so dramatic. Okay? Second time in a day.
Yeah,
and I
that
left
was
that
one
meeting.
Of your patterns was drama king
Yeah, so I left that meeting and I thought, what do they know? I didn't want to see it on myself.
Yeah.
Well, the third time's a charm. And that night, I have two daughters, and they were in college at the time. And one of my daughters called, and she was telling me something. And I said, Julie, that's absolutely ridiculous, and blah, blah, blah. She said, Mom, stop. When you do the drama thing, nobody can talk to you. So how about if we hang up and talk a different day? Clink.
Yeah.
Well, I had to sit there and look, and I thought, okay. And so the behavior pattern of the drama queen or king, there are plenty of drama kings out there, please note that. But then I had to say, well, I don't want to spend the rest of my life tattooed with drama queen. That's not pretty.
Yeah.
And I had to think, okay, what's the transformation? What's the healthy, positive opposite? And what I came up with was, storyteller.
Oh, yeah.
Drama queens or kings, you get a lot of adrenaline. You really do.
Yeah.
From you know, having a hissy fit. It's sort of fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you have to find a way to do it and use it in a positive way. Then, you know, Roy, I had to go back and say, where did this really start? And it started when I was a little kid, and I have an older brother, and I decided in my mind he got more attention. So if I wanted to really get everybody looking at me, I literally had a hissy fit, and it was lights, camera, action.
Huh.
And that's when I realized, oh, wow, I did this as a kid, and I would get attention, and I learned to do it as a grown-up. And then I had to change it into something that was more effective and mature.
That's so key. You understand why you're doing something, even if it's a destructive behavior. But if you really understand why you're doing it, it's much easier to attack it and look for the alternative.
Absolutely. Right on. Thank you for that.
Yeah, as a leader in your organization, okay, you pretty much understand now what your own dominant behavior patterns are, but how do you more effectively resolve conflicts and disputes so that the people you're working with and the people that work for you also are looking at their behavior patterns and overcoming them so you can get cooperation among everybody? That's, I guess, the million-dollar next question.
Well, it's truly a million-dollar question. And one of the things we've done is we've had people who have their whole team take the pattern-aware quiz.
Oh, I see.
And, you know, and I mean, the best thing to do, my suggestion would be to get copies of Don't Bring It to Work, which, I'm going to take some bragging rights, has won 9 book awards, including one of the 20 best books for new leaders.
Oh.
So I'm very proud of all of that.
Yeah, I think between those two books, you have 15 awards, I think, on your...
Yep, I do. Isn't that cool? Yeah, I was very proud of that. So what happens is, once you begin to look, and, you know, Roy, it's easier first to see the patterns out there.
Yeah.
When we do a half a day or one day programs in companies, it's really funny. We'll take a break, and I hear people going out for, you know, coffee or a bio break, and I hear them saying, oh, that's just like my boss.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just like my sister. Oh, that's just like my mother-in-law.
Yeah, do they ever say, oh, that's just like myself, though?
Well, that's what happens. So we come back from break, and I say, how many people really can kind of target the patterns on somebody? And every hand in the room goes up.
Yeah.
And then I say, all right, how many saw it on yourself? And about 4 hands go up.
Yeah.
So the rest of the time is spent looking at that. And what happens is, one of the things, and it's in the Don't Bring It to Work book, is toward the end, I have a thing in there called PEP Talk, which stands for Pattern Encounter Process, where you learn how to both talk about your pattern. You know, it's not, hello, my name is, I'm a drama queen. It's, you know, sometimes I have a tendency to overreact and it doesn't come out, which is ownership. And then you learn how to talk to the other person in their pattern. So,
oh, I see. Yeah, that's excellent.
And what it does is
what you need to overcome, and then
beautiful. You really get this. I'm loving this dialogue we're having, Roy.
Yeah. Yeah, you talk about the OUT formula also, the observe, understand, and transform. That's, I guess, what the overall process is of effectively.
It keeps it easy for people to think about it that way. So here's what happens. Once we can observe the pattern, it loosens its hold on us.
Yeah, amen.
Then that's the observe part. Then you go down and do a bit of a deep dive and say, where did this show up when I was growing up?
Yeah.
And you begin to understand it, and it loosens its hold 100 times better.
Yeah.
And then you have to make the commitment of, do you want this in your life, or do you want to, you know, kind of lessen the impact it has on you?
Yeah.
And that's the T, the transform, where you have to put some skin in the game and do a little bit of strength training to transform it, which is doable. It's all doable.
Well, let's focus now on women leaders. Men, you don't have to tune us out, please, because maybe you'll learn something too. But I know you wrote a book in 2012 titled Gutsy, How Women Leaders Make Change. And what are some specific behavior patterns that get handed down from mothers to their daughters that you women may need to change to become more effective leaders?
Well, you know, it's really interesting in that respect, because what happens is it's from mothers to daughters, and it's also cultural.
Oh.
And what I found when I wrote Gutsy, and before I tell you, you know, the patterns that are more, have women's names on them, I've had more men email me or call me and say, thank you. I got this for every woman in my life, I understand my wife better, or my direct report, or my right-hand woman at work.
Yeah.
And a lot of the men are saying, I'm getting this for my daughter because I want them to get this earlier. Obviously, they're talking, you know, graduating from high school and college age for that. But the patterns for women that seem to really play out, and almost every woman I've talked to will nod their head, yes, one is the pleaser.
Yeah.
You know, we have been trained to smile and say yes when we want to say, do it yourself.
That's what we men like about you women.
Yeah, well, those days are gone, Roy. I'm so sorry. Or they should be. Because what happens is the healthy opposite, the healthy new pattern, transformed pattern of the pleaser is the truth teller.
Yeah.
Who will say, absolutely. And what I've had to do, we do these gutsy women weekend retreats, mainly in Pennsylvania right now, but they'll be going around the country and we'll do some webinars about it. The hardest thing I have to do is teach women to say out loud the word N-O. Some women just choke on it. You mean no? And they say it like no, like they're asking a question. And I say, can you just say no? And then what I teach is to remember no is a complete sentence.
Why is it so hard for some women to speak out while other women get so tongue-tied? What seems to be the cause of that?
Well, again, it goes back to how and what we learned in childhood. And, you know, if you got kind of dirty looks or, you know, kind of told, mind your manners and don't speak out, and it was all negative, you become very careful. You don't want to be unpopular. Women have had a big problem with wanting to be, most women, there are many that, you know, but wanting to be in, quote, the in-group, and you see that in a lot of stuff around high school, is the need to be in the in-group. The other one, Roy, for women that is just so deep in us is the rescuer.
Oh.
You know, we have to jump in and save people.
Yeah.
And
my wife tries to save me all the time.
Well, I hope she's listening. Don't do it anymore, Mrs. Richards.
I wish she would be listening. No, that's a contention. I always call her my second conscience, too.
Well, that's a little different than rescuing.
Well, no, that's true. But,
yeah.
But in your book's introduction, you have an inspiring story about when your mother became gutsy and entered the workforce after years as a housewife and mother following your father's untimely death. And can you give some words of advice to, say, a female listener who is seeking a job after many years of raising a family? What's the best way to go about and do that and to sell yourself and to, you know, find that job that's right for you after you've been out of the workforce for a while?
Well, I think there are a lot of places you can go or even get online and take some tests about what your skills are.
Oh.
But for me, after and watching this, you know, my parents, it was very interesting. My father was in a family business that, as I say, was fiscally sound but emotionally bankrupt. He and his two brothers used to fight all the time.
Yeah, they
That's part of why I love to work with family businesses.
Yeah.
But anyway, he came home one night, and I heard him say to my mother, I'm done. And they went out to dinner and came home, and who knew how prophetic those words were, because he had a heart attack in the middle of the night and died.
Wow.
And, you know, it was we were all in shock. We had, you know, post-traumatic stress is what they call it now.
Yeah.
In those days, it was just shock.
Yeah.
And my mother, it was when she finally picked herself up and started to, you have to move. You have to move physically. You have to get going.
Yeah.
You can't sit around and stare, because then your nervous system starts to shut down.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think you said after 6 months she said she was going to change and she was going to go out and find a job, and by golly, she did.
Well, I remember, as I says in the beginning of the book, sitting at the top of the stairs, kind of eavesdropping, if you will, and I'm almost back there as a 14-year-old, hearing my mother downstairs saying, I can't sit here, you know, moping anymore, so I'm going to put on, she called it her, quote, war paint. She meant her lipstick and her rouge, and get out there and do something. And she really didn't have a lot of skills. I mean, you know, she was of the generation where housewife was what she was meant to do and be. So she, you know, she had to go out and experiment. But I what I learned from that, and what I know watching and doing a lot of coaching with other women and men too, is that you have to start moving.
Yeah. That's so
you know,
key.
It's interesting, Roy. I'm not anymore, but I did some rock climbing.
Oh.
Not my thing. I didn't love it, but I did
yeah.
it. And I remember being in a place where I was stuck and I couldn't find any place to move.
Oh.
And the guy said, you have to find another handhold and move. And there was no handhold.
Yeah.
And he said, you've got to move. If you stay in this place too long, then you're really going to fall. Just pretend you see something and move.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I started moving and, you know, a handhold miraculously showed up. So I didn't have to fall down the cliff,
well,
you know.
That's
but
something I would never want to do is rock climb.
Yeah, well, it wasn't my most favorite thing to do. But I did it just to see what it was like.
Well, okay.
But
see?
It's about moving. Moving. So that's my suggestion.
So that would be an action step. What are some other action steps for ladies in the audience who want to move their career forward? How can you become gutsy? Is it just taking that move? Or first, I guess you need to decide just what you want, where you want to move to before you take a move, obviously.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Gutsy was written from a slightly different perspective. I took somebody who I took through a coaching program and I wrote about, with her permission, I wrote about the things in there. And in there are lots of questions to answer to begin to see what makes us be able to speak out and where we start to hold back. Because if you're gutsy, you will speak out. But my big thing is it's all in the timing. You have to know when and how much. As you read Gutsy, you start to get a sense of the when and how much.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're seeing more and more women rising to the top. I was really shocked when the male-dominated company like GM named a woman a CEO. I know
yeah.
there's a CEO at Yahoo and a number of other large companies now. Do men and women really have different ways of thinking through problems? And where do women actually have an advantage over us men?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and there's nothing we can do about this except work on it. We have different structures in our brains. There's
yeah.
enough understanding now about brain physiology. It's very exciting. This is not
yeah.
my main field, but I've been researching
yeah.
it. And what happens is men have more gray matter in their brains, so they're really able to kind of be more task-oriented to say, here's what I'm going to do, there's what I'm going to go, everything else falls away. I will look at nothing else and get there.
Yeah.
That's because they have more, you guys have more gray matter.
Yeah.
And women have more white matter in their brain, and it crosses both sides of the brain.
Oh,
so we are more able to see how systems operate, and we're able to see the things from both sides of the vantage point.
Yeah.
Now, is one more beneficial? It started back in tribal times when men were the hunters and women
yeah.
were the gatherers.
Yeah.
And hunters needed to be very focused on catching whatever it was so people had food to eat for dinner. And so they had to be very directed, I'm going to go do this. Whereas women were the gatherers, and they would go out in groups together to get the berries and the herbs to bring back as condiments, but the men had to bring back the main meal, if you will. And
yeah.
women also had a bunch of children around, so they had to make sure they knew where everybody was.
Yeah.
So we are able to see things from a different perspective. I'm not going to say one is better than the other. I think that women have to develop that capacity to say, I'm going to do this and
yeah.
not look at anything else and get it done. And men have to say, let me see where everything fits into this before I
yeah.
make a decision.
And that's why
we are at a place of changing.
And that's why it's so important, and things are changing, that we have a mix of men and women in the top of corporate America now, or a small business or whatever, so that you get both those viewpoints.
Absolutely.
Well,
right on.
In closing this the questions, what words of inspiration would you have for a middle-aged mother that would give to her teenage daughter in these days and times? What would you do that if you were, back to that where your daughters were at home and you wanted to give them some inspiration?
Well, you know, I think you see that every so often when somebody on the Academy Awards has won and they go back to thank a parent.
Yeah.
And it's always the same thing. Thank you for helping me be able to dream. Thank you for helping me be able to say I can do it, so that you're not limiting your kids to say, in the old days, I'm sure you remember, I certainly do too, that, you know, oh, you know, you want to be a female, you want to be a doctor? No, be a nurse. You know, you can be a nurse, a teacher, or a social worker, you know.
Yeah, but my mother was very, very intelligent, but she was in college during the Great Depression in the 30s, and her brother was also in college, and she was encouraged, or she had to drop out and go to secretarial school because, you know, the guys always completed college, and that was
exactly
more important for them than the girls.
Yeah, and now there are more women in college than men.
I'm
not judging any of this. I'm just saying I think we have to give our children the opportunity, and we have now more capacity to do that than in the past. I mean, there were hard times, and we've been through hard times, but, you know, there is something about saying it's doable.
Yeah, and that's so counter to what, unfortunately, so many parents and teachers and other things implant in their children when they're young. You know, when the children are dreaming of something, they plant this little negative seed in there that says you're not good enough to be a major league ball player. You better stick to something you're good at or you can do, and or whatever the dream may be. There's always the dream quenchers.
Exactly. Roy, I want to end. I just want to say this, if we have a few seconds, about how powerful it is to begin to look at the patterns and change them. Is a story about a mother who called up to her daughter and said, hurry up, you're going to be late for school. And the daughter yells down, I don't want to go, I have a stomach ache, and nobody likes me, and they talk about me behind my back.
Yeah.
And the woman yells up, I've heard that for too many years, and besides, now you're the principal.
Yeah. Well, how best can someone obtain your award-winning books, Don't Bring It to Work, or Gutsy, How Women Leaders Make Change? Where's the best place to go to get those books?
The best place is on Amazon.
Okay,
And the best place, as I said, and please, it's a free, I mean, the books cost whatever it costs on Amazon, but the Pattern Aware quiz on the Sylvia LaFair site is it's free. It's there,
yeah,
so everybody can begin.
I recommend that, because I saw some, especially that martyr, I saw a lot of things that I do, and now I'm going to go back and think about my childhood and how they might have been implanted in my mind back then. It's a fascinating thing to take, and I would highly recommend. That's SylviaLaFair.com is that website.
Right.
And you can. I also think you can access that through CEO Options, because I think that actually is where I found that quiz.
Yeah, you can get it at CE Options, CEOPTIONS.
Yeah, that. And you have a lot of products there. The Tender Learning Care, Total Leadership Connections program. Now in your 12th year. And you're having a Gutsy Women Leader Seminars that you talked about. I think you have one in June that's coming
up. In June, yep.
Yeah, I would highly recommend that anyone in middle age, be or man or woman, who is not satisfied with your work day and you're embroiled in too many conflicts, or you see too many conflicts around you, or your business is stalled and not going where you want it to go, that you go to those websites and learn more about Sylvia's services and check her books out, because I think she has some really fascinating information there that I'd never heard from any other sources, and it's definitely worth checking into.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for that, Roy.
And thank you so much for joining us today, and best of success in your many myriad adventures that you have in speaking and conducting seminars and workshops and all the other good things you do.
Well, thank you, and thanks for the great interview.
And have a great day.
You too.
I trust that you don't routinely behave like a child on the job, and I trust also that your boss and colleagues don't act like children. But the rest of this program today, we're going to talk about a subject very close to my heart, how experienced men and women of middle age, most of us at, as veterans of the workforce, would like to be treated by the boss. How would you like to be treated by the boss? I'm speaking to you if you're one of two groups of people, either executives or managers in a company who manage one or more employees 40 years old or older, perhaps older than you are in today's expanding world of high tech. Or the other set of people I'm talking to is if you're over 40 or 45 and you work for someone else who you're not happy with today. Perhaps you're seeking a new position, maybe inside or outside the company. Maybe you're out of work right now. You want to work for a boss who really respects your age and treats you like an individual and not a number, and you'd like to size up potential new bosses. So this is what we're helping you to look for. Do you respect? Do the bosses respect mature employees your age? That's a key question you need to ask yourself when you're looking at any kind of a job situation. You know, in recharging your business or not-for-profit enterprise, seasoned employees over age 40 can be staunch allies or significant obstacles to change. Properly inspired, long-tenured employees contribute a unique combination of job skills, an historical perspective on company operations, industry dynamics, and customer preferences. On the minus side, though, uninspired veterans sometimes lead a reactionary charge against the infusion of fresh ideas or the introduction of new methods of operation. I still recall a meeting a few years back when an experienced veteran in a different department, we were talking about some real big changes in our operations, and he sat back there looking with a sour look on his face with his arms folded over his chest, a sure sign of resistance. You know, if I'm a long-term individual contributor or a first-line manager in my late 40s, 50s, or 60s, I may be working for a boss young enough to be my son and daughter, and some of us have a natural tendency to resent working for a boss significantly younger than we are. You know, I've been around and know this business better than my boss. So to add to the trepidation, I may be fearful of being let go in today's economy when it is difficult, if not impossible, for those of us over 50 to find a new job, and fear makes it very uncomfortable for me to propose change or to just keep up with all the innovation that's going on around me and to experiment with new ideas. As a representative of our graying North American workforce, here are a few suggestions for company leaders, young or old. Here is what we want from you, we baby boomers and thereabouts. Request number one, please communicate clearly what you expect from us. Effective two-way communication, I don't need to tell you, is an absolute necessity if we're to work together in harmony. You and us do not always view the world of work or work assignments from an identical perspective. And don't just simply assume that because we've been around a while, we understand everything you want. Please inform us of the targeted end result, but stick around long enough to receive our input before you hand out the assignments, and we would prefer at least some personal discretion in organizing our daily tasks. Certainly all the years we've put in with this company, we deserve that. Challenge number two is respect our experience, both on the job and in life in general. Whatever the challenge, it's highly probable that one or more of your seasoned subordinates has been there and done that. The 55-year-old former homemaker on her first job outside the home can contribute a wealth of organization, conceptual, probably volunteer activities, and human relations skills. So always look beyond formal education as well and give us some credit for all those years we've been pounding the pavement here on Earth. Challenge number three is make us feel special. Without doubt, some of your tenured subordinates will resent having been passed over for a more senior position, including perhaps the job you now hold, and therefore it's very important that you overcome that resentment by demonstrating time and again how essential each one of us is as a member of your team. Sometimes all we need is a sincere thank you for a job well done, But it would also be nice occasionally if we participate in the merit raises and incentive bonuses that are floating around. Most of us would be honored to serve as role models to help train less experienced colleagues. And challenge number four, offer us the training that we need. I know we're older and we're not going to be around that long, but simply because we're over age 50 does not mean that we have no desire to learn new skills or to explore fresh horizons. And we need to remain up on the latest technologies so we can compete both within the company for promotions, but also we can help the whole company compete beyond our boundaries by having the latest up-to-date information on what's going on out there. Keeping us up-to-date is a sound investment. And challenge number five, you don't need to continually remind us that you are the boss. Remember, of us, most of those, us and the baby boom generation are over 45, grew up in a traditional command and control business environment. We're well aware of the fact that you're the one in charge, but despite our disappointment at not being higher up, we respect your authority and will follow your lead so long as you demonstrate confidence, integrity, and impartiality in handing out work assignments and rewards. Challenge number six, please acknowledge that we have a lot to lose. You know, we're not just numbers. We probably have teenagers about to go to college. We're looking toward retirement, and we have a number of years invested in your company. Most of your older subordinates have invested many years, and it's easy to understand our overriding desire for job security. At our age, it might be impossible to locate a comparable position in another company, and we're also concerned about adequate replacement health insurance, educating our children, and financing retirement. So please, if we're doing the work, keep us around. It's great if employees can choose from cafeteria-style benefit options, which enhance our sense of well-being, and it is fair to ask for assurance of continued employment as long as we meet or exceed realistic performance criteria and company finances remain sound overall. That's pretty fair to ask for, I would think. And if you can give us those assurances, we'll be a lot better and more motivated employees. And last but not least, challenge number seven, above all else, please do not stereotype us and assume that we are unable to adapt to change. I hate it when people talk about baby boomers or classify people at a certain age. Every employee in their late 40s, 50s, and 60s is a unique, living, and breathing human being, not a stereotypical member of the baby boom generation or Generation Y or anything else, Generation X, I don't even know what they mean. Challenges with new projects and ideas, more than a few of us are open to mid-career experimentation, radical new technologies, and unconventional organization structures. And yes, we do know how to use iPads to blog and to interface with colleagues on Facebook and Twitter. To summarize, onboard veterans, empower your onboard veterans and eliminate every vintage of age discrimination. Create an information democracy and elicit feedback from us and enlist your most trusted seniors as deputy agents of change. That will make us feel a valuable part of the team. Is there any reason not to honor and engage qualified older employees up until our final day on the job? As a leadership team that's generally committed to older employee motivation, will be well on its way to enhancing its most cherished asset, the uniquely qualified collection of seasoned employees who drive day-to-day operations. And for additional ideas on seasoned employee motivation, empowerment, all that good stuff, plus a comprehensive roadmap to company revival and recovery, take a look at our newest book, Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines, subtitled Recreating and Re-energizing Lagging Enterprises and Participants Midstream. That's the latest book by me, Roy Richards. And to preview the book or to obtain a free gift or to contact me, the author, Roy Richards, simply go to our website, www.middleagerenewal.com. And now let's all spring forward into a happy and productive workforce as we spring into spring. And thank you so much for joining us. See you next week.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.